Okay, I'm Vice Chair Don Erickson, and I'm going to chair the meeting today. Emad is he's got some family issues he's dealing with, and I was asked this afternoon to chair, so that's what vice chairs do. We'll start out by quickly reviewing our meeting notes from our last meeting on the 25th of January. Emad called that to order at 4:04. We went into our discussion items. Pierce Transit had provided information on transit ridership. And then we went into a roundtable discussion, session one, economic development, finance, and developers development. Brian gave some background, and then we went into our discussion. Kathy Raines of Cost Development described her perspective on transit-oriented development and introduced her projects here. Had a good discussion talking about affordable housing. They provide percentages within their developments. They had, I think it was 30%, under 50% of AMI. Jill Sherman of Girding talked about her project in Portland and some of her other projects, including a project up on Capitol Hill. And we had a discussion about the different contexts of Portland and Tacoma and Seattle. And then Pat Beard, the city's Office of Economic Development, the Department of Economic Development, gave us an overview of TOD projects, TOD projects here in Tacoma. And she talked about the benefits of TOD and ways to activate the space under elevated rail lines. And she had some examples from elsewhere that she showed us. So it appears that for the Freight House Square option, that would be extremely important. And hopefully economic development will play a major role in promoting that when we get there. So with that, if there are no questions on that, let's move on to our first item today. And that's we have our TOD Roundtable Series Session Number 2. Regional and local policies. Did staff want to say anything to lead into this, or should we? How do you want to handle this?
Vice Chair, I'm sorry. May I cut in, Brian?
Yeah.
For the record, because this meeting is being recorded. For the record, this is a meeting on February 22nd, 2021. It's a meeting rescheduled from February 15th. And you just reviewed the meeting notes of last meeting. And the second item on the agenda was public comment. For the record, we have not received any comments on any discussion item on the agenda. And so now we're on discussion item number one, TOD roundtable. I'll turn it back to Brian for an introduction. Thank you.
Okay, Brian.
Thanks very much, Wong and Don. So just for the record, I guess, this is Brian Boudet with the City's Planning and Development Services Department. As the group knows, back in December, we talked about trying to move forward with the group's discussion that really happened sort of before COVID threw a monkey wrench in everything. And we were started down the path of sort of kind of talking about principles and the ways to evaluate both transit projects and the city's planning and other initiatives that might happen in transit-oriented development areas. But unfortunately, that kind of sort of got put on hold, and the desire was really to get back to that so that probably at the end of the day, one of the outputs that the TOD advisory group can provide, not only that focuses on the three projects that the group has kind of been tasked with reviewing, but potentially serve as a broader communication and understanding item that can really operate in the city longer term, is a real focus on principles about what it takes to create successful trans-oriented development areas. And so in support of that, the group, we've scheduled these three roundtable sessions. This is the second of three. The first one that we had in January, as Don mentioned, was really focused on the private development side of things and understanding better what some of the important factors are that go into the success of seeing private development in and around transit-focused areas. This second one today is focused on regional and local policies. And then the third one, which we will be doing in March, is going to be focused on more national examples, both good and bad, hopefully, thinking about what things have worked and what things haven't worked. And the intent is that those three roundtables will really provide an enhanced foundation, really, of understanding for the whole group, as well as moving into a discussion about what some of those broader principles are and what maybe a white paper or some sort of a product could be coming forward potentially in this summer. And I think in the packet, we included kind of a tentative schedule for the six or so meetings, which would build to that point. So again, this is the second of those three roundtable sessions. So with that, I'm going to turn it over. I'm the last of the four presenting today. And so I'll move it along. We've got, and really pleased to have, Maggie Moore from the Puget Sound Regional Council also with us, and Tim Bates from Sound Transit, and then Tina Lee from Pierce Transit. And then, like I said, I'll finish it up, and then we'll open it up for discussion after we go through those four presentations. So with that, I'll turn it over to Maggie.
Great, thank you. Okay, just a head nod that I have it in presentation mode. Everything looks good? Okay, great. So I'm Maggie Moore. I'm an associate planner at the Puget Sound Regional Council. And I'm gonna go through a bit of what the Puget Sound Regional Council is, why we play a role in TOD, and what we see that role as, and how we define TOD. So for those that don't know, PSRC is the regional planning agency for the four county central Puget Sound region. So we cover those four counties, 82 cities and towns, the ports, as well as the tribes within the region. And there are about just over 4 million people who live in that region right now. And the regional council plays a different role from local jurisdictions. So planning in Washington State is guided by GMA, and it requires cities to plan for population growth. And PSRC develops a long-range plan with our membership that determines where and how the region grows. So we just adopted this plan in October. It's called Vision 2050. And that really sets the stage for counties and cities who prepare their plans, which are then certified by PSRC. So we kind of take a larger step back in the regional level and provide direction for growth. And what that growth is really responding to right now is the region is expected to grow over the next 30 years by about 1.6 million people. So I just tried to figure this out. The state of Hawaii's population is 1.4 million people. So it's like everyone in Hawaii plus 200,000 people more moving to the region over the next 30 years. Vision 2050 is meant to respond to all of that growth and help our local jurisdictions do so too. And it sets direction for population and employment growth with a really ambitious goal of putting 65% of the region's population growth and 75% of employment growth into regional growth centers and high capacity transit station areas. So regional growth centers, there are 29 of them designated by PSRC as mixed use areas to receive growth and prioritize for investments. And in Tacoma, there are two of them. There's downtown Tacoma as well as Tacoma Mall. And then we define high capacity transit station areas as those areas within half a mile of existing or planned light rail and streetcar stations, commuter rail stations, ferry terminals, and within a quarter mile of BRT stations. And in addition to that, our regional growth strategy also puts every type of city and town into its own regional geography. And since Tacoma is one of the larger cities in our region, it's considered a metro city, which means it's prioritized for a lot of growth of the region's growth over the next 30 years. So Tacoma, we see Tacoma is getting a lot of that growth and then a lot of it going into these high capacity transit station areas and into the regional growth centers. So it's, we think it's really great that this committee exists and that Tacoma is really thinking about TOD early on. So as those investments are being made into the future. The reason why our regional growth strategy is oriented this way is it's being responsive to the unprecedented levels of investment and transit in the region. And we also have this shared understanding of the connections to different opportunities that transit provides, as well as the capacity for a development around those transit station areas and the associated benefits that comes with that development and prioritizing those investments. In Vision 2050, TOD is defined as mixed-use areas with housing, commercial space, services, and jobs that improves mobility and access for those that live there and visit these spaces while reducing automobile dependency. Probably a widely accepted definition of TOD. However, we also recognize that while many transit station areas are ideal locations for growth and development, not all will play a role in accommodating growth. For example, some transit station areas are located in rural areas and provide connections to urban areas, whereas others are access points to the regional system. As well, TOD stations located in or near manufacturing industrial centers may need to function differently to maintain a focus on protecting those industrial lands. So really understanding the local context is important. So we really promote doing station area planning for these areas, which is a special opportunity for planners and residents for visioning what they want a place to look like for current and future residents and businesses. And it's also a good time to understand what impacts development could have on existing residents and businesses and what kind of mitigation could be needed. So PSRC adopted our plan last October. We set this regional policy guidance and the growth strategy. So kind of what's our role now? PSRC has a really large data department, and one of our big roles is data and monitoring. So we support our local jurisdictions in collecting data, as well as we do our own data analysis. So for example, we have our own displacement risk mapping and opportunity mapping work and work plans that we do. So these are kind of similar to, I think, what Tacoma has, but they're done at a regional level. We also do some TOD station monitoring. So over the past couple of years, we've done a project where we take 100 station areas, which are those little dots on this map, and we monitor data for them in terms of population growth, employment growth, housing affordability, housing development, and different demographics. And we report all that out and also put it on our website for those 100 stations. Our other big role is convening and coordination. So we have our own TOD committee at the Regional Council that works to advance Vision 2050 by providing guidance to PSRC. So a lot of our jurisdictions in our region are also planning for TOD. So this is an opportunity for them to come together, provide updates, and work on various tasks. And then we also have a regional housing strategy we're working on right now. This is a big focus this year. It's one of the first implementation items of Vision 2050. And it's intended to be a playbook on regional and local actions to preserve, improve, and expand housing stock to develop a range of affordable, accessible, and safe housing choices. And this, along with our regional equity strategy, will help guide and support upcoming local comprehensive plan updates. So that's some of the stuff we're working on that touches on TOD, and then also other work program items. So in terms of what PSRC's thoughts on planning for successful TOD and what that looks like, the first is providing choices. So ensuring that these areas are inclusive for commercial and residential tenants. So making sure that people of all income levels and all housing types and sizes are able to live in these spaces. Really leveraging transit investments to attract growth. So we know that people are going to be moving to the region over the next 30 years. And how can we leverage investments, not just in transit, but all of our other investments to attract people to these areas. also recognizing that these areas are important points for providing access to opportunities. And when we say this, we mean the whole gambit from educational resources to community resources to just grocery stores and other amenities in the community. Not only are the do those exist in a TOD area where one might live, but transit makes it easy to get to another one and access the opportunities there. And then really when planning for TOD, it's important to understand the local context. So we know that TOD won't look the same everywhere, but station area planning really provides an opportunity to understand what you want a space to look like and working with existing community members to really see that vision out. That's all I have today. I'm looking forward to the rest of the panel.
Okay. Do we want it? Does anybody have questions now of Maggie, or would you rather wait until we go through the whole group?
I can't remember what the group decided on. I'm sorry.
No. I'm just wondering if there's anybody has questions now. If not, we'll move on to Tim Bales.
Chair, I just wanted to ask if you could speak.
Go ahead.
I wanted to ask, I wasn't aware that we were going to experience so much population loss in the South Sound, and I'm wondering if you could speak a little bit to those three gray dots at all.
Oh, sorry. Those don't have the full context. So that was previous loss for those station areas, and that could just be that our census track and the boundaries changed. I could try to get more information on that to you, too. You're talking about the map with all the colored dots on it.
Yeah, there's just three big gray dots surrounding us. And I was just curious if that's because we're drawing people inwards, like people were already living there and they decided to come to the city for job opportunities, or maybe what that was about.
Yeah, I don't have a specific answer, but I can follow up maybe with the whole report and it can provide a little bit more context.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Because we've seen a ton of growth in places like South Hill and other surrounding areas besides just Tacoma. And so I would have thought that that pace would be keeping up for all of the other cities too, especially once we add the BRT, seeing more growth out in that direction. But you do this every day, so you know way more than I do.
Anybody else?
Chair, I have a quick question just to clarify. Is the Tacoma Dome Station, is that considered a regional growth center or a high capacity transit, or is it both?
That's just for Maggie?
Yeah, that was for Maggie, sorry.
Yeah. Definitely considered a high capacity transit station area. Maybe someone from Tacoma could answer if it's included in your regional growth center or not.
Yeah, it's located in the downtown regional growth center.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. If we don't have any more questions, let's go on to Tim Bates, Sound Transit.
Hi, everyone. Let's see if I can get this to work. This is gonna be... All right, do you see a title slide?
See it.
All right. So good to be here. I'm Tim Bates. I'm a senior land use planner at Sound Transit. I think many of you have seen me before in this meeting. And I actually sit, I spend a lot of my time with Tacoma Dome Link Extension, but I actually sit in the agency's Office of Land Use Planning and Development, which is our TOD group. So let me give you a little overview of our TOD program today. And I have a lot of information, so I'm going to try to get through it all. So just to start off, you know, Sound Transit really supports TOD near our stations. And that's because TOD really can help to create those vibrant neighborhoods and to support transit ridership, as we all know and have been talking about, right? So that is a great thing for us. We love to have TOD happen around our stations. You know, our primary mission, what the reason we exist, is to design and build transit, right, for the region. So in the process of doing that, there are several ways that we can facilitate TOD. So those will be what I talk about today. And broadly, when we think about TOD in the agency, there's sort of two big functions or phases, you might say. One is to think about TOD as we're developing our infrastructure projects. And the other is the actual process of finding a developer and building the building and getting the TOD done. So they're a little distinct in that way, but it covers sort of the gamut of implementing the regional transit system. Successful TOD is, you know, I think you've seen lots of things about TOD, but from our perspective, we think of successful TOD as something that is a development type that integrates transit and land use together. And as Maggie was talking, it's a strategy to help us focus our urban growth around transit facilities. And that helps leverage our transit investment to get development and density around our stations and more economic activity in the cities that our stations are in, but also helps those cities to achieve the growth get those benefits as well. We think TOD really depends on having some of the right ingredients, you might say, or building blocks. And I've got a couple here on the screen. That's not necessarily an exhaustive list, but it's meant to give you a flavor, right? TOD is inherently a higher density and compact form. So the urban form is more, there's more there, you know? And it generally includes a mix of uses in that area that would meet someone's daily needs. Because part of the point of TOD is to reduce dependence on a single occupancy vehicle. So of course you need to have high capacity transit to do that. And you also need to have the matching investments in bike and pedestrian infrastructure and really a reduced focus on cars and on parking. And so those together help to create the environment around the station that will help make successful TOD. And folks have lots of things to do and places to live and work around the station, and the ability to get to all those, as Maggie was saying, using transit, that's where you really get the value. So types of TOD, you know, at the agency, we like to think of two types of TOD, and that helps us think about the roles and responsibilities or really how Sound Transit's involved in delivering TOD. So first there's what we call community TOD, which is really the TOD that happens in that half mile, as that Maggie was describing, that half mile around the station. And then there's agency TOD, which is really the TOD that Sound Transit, that's what we call the TOD that we're directly involved in. And that's when we bring in public and private and nonprofit developers to achieve TOD on our agency property. And to help contextualize that a little bit, when we look at the area around our station, so here you can sort of see we've got these blobs, and those are meant to represent sort of the half mile, or more really in this case, a 10 to 15 minute walk around the station, again, reinforcing that walkable nature of the area. Within that, you know, there's these different zones of responsibility. So of course, Sound Transit has a lot of responsibility for the station and that very intimate environment there where our customers are coming to use the transit. And then on the other end of the spectrum, of course, the city is in charge of the development regulations and shaping the broader area in the station, And then in the middle, there's this sort of zone of overlap where we each have responsibilities to make sure that the station is well integrated into the urban environment. So to dive a little more deeply into that so that I can illustrate for you where Sound Transit's direct role in TOD is to look to blow that station area up a little bit and to look at some of these different areas. So that community TOD area, you can see is really the lion's share of where we would expect to see that core area of TOD happen. So although Sound Transit has a big role in bringing high capacity transit, that community TOD area is really the much bigger opportunity. And that's the area that Sound Transit doesn't have a direct role in terms of the development itself. When we look at here on the left, the places that we call sort of the footprint, so this is the where Sound Transit actually is involved, both through our operations footprint and our construction footprints, you can see that, you know, of course we'll have a permanent footprint, we call it. That's where our transit system, that's where people enter the transit system and the stations, that sort of thing, and along the elevated rail or the guideway. And there's also the construction footprint, which is property we need in order to build the actual transit system. So that's for like lay down of materials and staging of materials and that sort of thing in order to build the thing. So each of those might have different opportunities for TOD. So in the operations footprint, there is the potential for what we would call joint development. So integrating some TOD into that footprint, depending on what we've got there, there may be opportunity for that. And then really traditionally in our construction footprint, that's where we've seen most of our TOD projects to date. And these are areas that once we've completed our transit purpose for those, once we've finished constructing the transit project, we may be able to redevelop those parts of that property as agency TOD down the line. So here I've got two examples on the screen. On the left, I've got an example from our Mount Baker station in Seattle, which is an agency TOD project that's really right up against the station. So that station's sort of off on the left there. And then on the right is another community TOD project that's about a block and a half away from the station. That just, you know, the city of Seattle worked on coming up with the right sort of zoning and regulation to produce that sort of development, so that TOD there. So again, to just provide that context of where our role really is in delivering TOD. So when we think about our TOD projects and what that role is, and I mentioned earlier, there's sort of an overall thinking about TOD as we go through the lifespan of our projects, we like to try to think about TOD at all the phases of implementing our projects. So that includes the station planning phase, where we're thinking about where will our infrastructure go and what are some of the different locations. It includes a little further down the line, once we've got a little better idea of where the transit project will go, looking at more specific opportunities. Where may there be opportunities to do agency TOD. And then as we really have sort of completed the design and we go into construction of the transit project, that's when we can really dive into that implementation phase where we know what we're going to have at the end of the day and we can really work to find that development partner. And again, I should say, you know, Sound Transit does not build TOD. We bring the land in essence, and we go out and find development partners to deliver our agency TOD. And so then the development partner will then go in and design, permit, finance, and build the TOD project itself. All of this work happens in the context of a couple of really key policy and state statute pieces that I wanted to mention. So first, all of our work at Sound Transit or all of our TOD work is guided by our equitable TOD policy, which was adopted by our board in 2018. And it really directs staff to consider TOD as a key element in delivering the transit system. Now, of course, it's one of many priorities for our agency, the first of which is to deliver the regional transit, since you can't have TOD without the T, as we like to say, gotta have the transit. But the TOD is a core thing for us to think about as we go forward. And you know, I've listed here some examples of goals that our TOD policy sets out. And I'll just very quickly, you know, of course, I've mentioned many of these things. TOD is great because it helps support our ridership. It helps our local jurisdictions in achieving their growth plans. Part of our goals for TOD, our TOD projects, is to make sure that we are engaging with communities as we work to define what that TOD will look like as we get to the implementation phase. Including to reflecting the diversity that's in our communities that we're working in. To do that, we work to integrate TOD into the transit planning process, as I've described. And a big component of all of this is really to think about and to look at how we can create housing, and especially affordable housing, which I'll talk about a little bit more in a minute. And then the last piece, of course, as I've mentioned, we really, you know, access to the station is really important. And so having that walkable, bicycle-friendly environment around the station really is part of supporting our system, and also it's part of achieving that transit-oriented community around the station. I mentioned affordable housing. You know, we have state statute that directs us on our approach to delivering affordable housing and our commitment to delivering affordable housing on our surplus property. So when we go to do agency TOD, we have a rule that is many people refer to as the 80-80-80 rule. And that really just means that when we have property that we're going to take out for agency TOD, 80% of the land that's suitable for housing must first be offered to a qualified entity, or what, really an affordable housing developer, or potentially a city that was going to develop that land for affordable housing. And then of that land, the units on that, 80% of those need to be developed as affordable housing. And those should be affordable to folks who make 80% of the area median income or less. So that's the 80-80-80. It's a bit of a mouthful, but basically saying we really need to try to deliver affordable housing as part of our agency TOD process. So what does it all mean? What have we all done? So I just wanted to end with some highlights on our TOD program to date. You know, right now we're still working off largely off of the system that exists up in, you know, from the airport up into Seattle. And as part of that, we've got over 2,100 actually units either built or in the process. So that means sort of anywhere from negotiations to construction. And of those, more than 1,500 units are affordable. So to achieve that, you can imagine that requires a lot of investment, public investment, to make this happen. You see here it says $1.1 billion of public and private, and there is a lot of public investment, including from the state, including from the counties, and in the city as well. So Sound Transit can contribute to that when we meet that 80-80-80 rule and deliver land for affordable housing. Our board can actually discount the property value of that land in order to facilitate TOD. So we can reduce the cost that the developer will have in working to develop that land. So that's one of the ways in which we can deliver, you know, at the board's discretion, better outcomes for affordable housing as well. So hopefully that gives you a little insight into our program, and I'm sure there's more we could talk about, but that's what I've got for the introduction.
So does anybody have questions of Tom before we go on to Tita? No questions? Okay, you're lucky. We'll catch you later. Okay, let's go on to Tina Lee of Pierce Transit. Hi, Tina.
Hello. Okay. Can you see that? You've got the presentation up in front of you now?
Yeah, it's right up there.
Awesome. Thank you. Okay. I'm going to jump in. That's always the most stressful part, is getting the presentation. But so I just wanted to start very quickly also with Pierce Transit. So we've taken it from that regional down to the very local, and Brian will really finish it with the local, with the Tacoma perspective. And I just put one slide in here on Pierce Transit. You see me talking about Pierce Transit and our BRT corridor quite frequently, but just that reminder that for Pierce Transit, we are the local transit provider, and we have three lines or modes of service, and there are bus service, Pierce Transit for individuals with disabilities who can't for some reason use our fixed route service, and van pull. And then just quickly, summary on our typical rider and who they are. And as we do surveys and we talk with our riders, these statistics that you have in front of you on their income, and 41% generally don't own a car, these hold true year after year as we talk to many of our riders. And we're talking about TOD, and I wanted to ground us a bit on Pierce Transit and our service area, and also where our bus stops are and where people are able to board our system. And what I've done is pulled quite a few slides out of our long-range plan. One of the questions we had were, what plans do you utilize that really provide guidance and orient us to TOD? And our long-range plan really is that document. We have a couple. But important when I pulled this out of here is that realization that 73% of people living in Pierce County are within that half a mile of a bus stop, and then 52% are within a quarter of a mile. And that's important as you think back about the first presentation from the Puget Sound Regional Council on those study areas along high-capacity transit corridors and light rail versus BRT and the area around bus stops. And we find, as I work in transit and with people who are trying to take the bus, that quarter of a mile to half a mile is really the furthest someone is really willing to walk to ride a bus and take that transit that we're trying to provide as these TOD projects identify in our communities. This is just a map that's right out of our long-range plan, and we tend to update our plan every 3 to 5 years. It's a 20, 30-year vision, and it helps identify where we anticipate to grow our service, and for this conversation, where we intend to grow with bus rapid transit. Those future BRT corridors are very important. What you see on the map here, that golden area is our system, our service area, so it's 292 square miles of Pierce County, and the different shading are either regional growth centers or centers of local importance or countywide centers. The gray lines are the maps, and it starts to show you that web of how we're trying to provide connections with our local bus service between those areas that our communities are really planning for growth in jobs and housing, where business districts may be going, and where we see the most population and people trying to ride service, because our job is really to provide those connections so they can use our service to make the transportation connections to live their daily lives. In our long-range plan, we're looking ahead 20 years, and what we're planning for is growth in service. And we anticipate, if we realize the vision of that plan, of almost a 50% growth in our service hour for the services that we can provide, but nearly 200% growth in boardings on a daily basis using our service. And that's really significant because we think about the volume of growth in both people and jobs that are planned for Tacoma and our entire region. We have to have these different types of strong transit services to support that. And we have to have the housing and the areas for people to live, work, and play. So what I've pulled for the next couple slides are some of the pages right out of our plan. And what we try to do, we're a small enough agency. We don't have a department that is just a TOD. We have our planning department, and we participate in planning with our communities, either with the cities like Tacoma. This example is actually University Place. But we have staff that work on a regular basis with each of our jurisdictions, and we're trying to work with them and coordinate their zoning codes that are supportive to transit and to transit oriented development and to planning, so that our communities grow in a way that we can help provide the service that is useful to the communities. We know that that density, lots of people living in an area and jobs, makes our transit service more efficient, and we're able to provide more service. I did a quick snippet here, and University Place last year, we were working with the community on their form-based code. They actually did adopt this unanimously in December of 2020, and that code helps set the tone on how the community will also grow and develop. And what I snipped there was a sentence that talks about these corridors transitioning early from that auto-dependent drive-by land use pattern to one with rich and diverse mixes of pedestrian scale and higher densities, really provides an opportunity to upgrade transit services so that they also succeed. When we have that type of zoning, the transit can be more efficient. We can provide more, and it's this symbiotic relationship between our service and what is TOD. These two are going to be very familiar to you. So these are also right out of our long-range plan, but we watch and we try to participate in development. And you've seen me talk a lot about our bus rapid transit corridor. We provide information to the Federal Transit Administration related to economic development. And when we've done that work, we share projects like these with them so that they know that these are viable corridors that are expected to grow, and we can support that growth as the community develops. So the tracks one, I do want to point out, you are all very familiar with that project, and it was that piece of property next to the Tacoma Dome station that Pierce Transit owned when the Tacoma Dome station was developed. That was purchased as a construction staging use, and we used it for a number of years for storage. But with the city's help, we were able to work with this project and issue the RFQ and find a developer that could build a project we really do support. And what's really nice about this, it also allows us in that purchase and sale agreement, we've included language where the project has to provide an ORCA card to every property for, I believe it's 5 years. So again, trying to build that relationship between transit and supporting transit and transit supporting a project as it moves forward. Other projects that are in our long range plan that we work with are things like the James Center area, which is up by the Tacoma Community College. And you think of that area, I'm gonna show you a map how bus rapid transit is planned to grow in Pierce County. Our routes 2 and 3 are programmed for those next BRT corridors. They both will come to the transit center at TCC, which is adjacent to this James Center North project. And I just saw the master plan notice come through for that project. So we know that that project is moving forward, and that's a project that our transit service can support that type of TOD, and us participating in the planning in our community helps support it as well. I grabbed, actually, this is a Lakewood project right next to that, and that was in the News Tribune last week. And this is, as the city says, a game changer. And what's gonna be really interesting about this Lakewood Station TOD project that is gonna be moving forward is this is right next to Sound Transit's Lakewood Station. It's land, a portion of it that was owned by DOT or still is, but will become this type of TOD. Pierce Transit doesn't have great service that's running right in front of this area. So in our planning, and we sit on the City of Lakewood's planning team that is working on this and that released this proposal to try to develop this area, we know that we have to be watching this and increase our transit service as this project develops, because there'll be more of a demand. Right now, there's not a lot happening there to justify our limited resources to have a strong route. But what we're thinking is as we develop our BRT 2 or 3 or 4, we might need to extend one of those routes to run past this site so that it has the type of transit service it needs to actually be productive in the future. This is also a map right out of that plan, and it gives you a sense of the proposed growth in the plan where you have those darker green lines. There's either an increase in frequency and span. The blue lines are new routes that might be implemented. But what you can't tell from that map is those bus rapid transit corridors, and those are the high capacity transit routes, and those are the ones that really can support TOD very well. This map shows you where those corridors are happening. Route 1 is right down the middle of our spine on Pacific Avenue to the Tacoma Dome Station in downtown, but then you have our Route 2, which is on 19th Street in Bridgeport, our Route 3, which would connect Tacoma to Lakewood on South Tacoma Way, our Route 4, and then over in the Puyallup area, our 402. We really do think the Route 2 will be our next corridor, to the point that this year we're working on a system expansion study to dive deeper into each of our BRT corridors and develop to a, probably a 3 to 5% planning level how those BRT systems will evolve. But we're also working to obtain the first $10 million to use for project development of Route 2. And that would be that corridor that, again, would connect into downtown Tacoma up to TCC and Lakewood. So for wrapping this up, I included this transit. And really, it is an asset. And we see it as a tool to supporting employers and employees, many of them at TOD along the corridor, the economic development. And what I really didn't include here was information on how economic development really can follow and grow along these high capacity transit corridors through projects like TOD projects. We've talked to our planning partners and our partners in Lane Trans or in Vancouver with C-Tran, with the Vine, and up in Community Transit with Swift. And they both have stories of TOD projects that come on board very quickly as these types of high capacity transit services are developing. So we see our role as really that transit to help support those projects and help our communities with their planning efforts to help build not only transit, but the community. And that is the end of my slideshow.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there questions, Tina, before we move on? Any questions? We have an opportunity at the end to, as a group, ask questions of all the participants today. Brian, City of Tacoma, Planning Manager.
All righty. Let me see. Can you see my screen?
See it.
All righty. So thank you for the opportunity to kind of round out our four speakers here today, talk a little bit about City of Tacoma policies and some examples or experiences that we have seen. I think you'll see, and I sent the presentation, I think, was sent to everyone in their packets, all of the presentations, so I won't go through every single detail here. I want to make sure we have time at the end, as the vice chair mentioned, to have a little discussion. This isn't intended to be one-way presentations, but really an opportunity for discussion and questions. So you'll see a lot of crossover here, I think, with presentations that you saw before me as far as the basic components of transit-oriented development. And this comes largely from the city's transportation master plan, which is one of the pieces of our One Tacoma comprehensive plan. But you very much see this similar themes here. It's obviously the incorporation of numerous high capacity, high intensity transit facilities, but really grounded in providing alternatives to auto-oriented transportation, particularly the pedestrian, but also bicycle, transit and other facilities all integrated in. You have a dense mix of uses, most commonly with residential and commercial, but there certainly are other options when it comes to transit-oriented development. Affordable housing, mixed income housing is particularly critical in these areas. I think in planning in general, sort of a growing emphasis on making sure that as in the next phase of development and redevelopment of areas, that one of the challenges for the last few decades has been the areas that have often received the greatest focus and investment have not ended up turning out to be the most diverse from an income and other perspectives. And so that really needs to be an important focus over the next couple of decades. And the importance of high quality design in really creating the kinds of districts that people want to be in. Now, with respect to the city's comprehensive plan, and this goes back, honestly, at least a couple of decades, the city has long focused on centers as the core of our growth strategy. You see the map there on the right-hand side that outlines all of our what we call mixed-use centers. The downtown on there, the big one in the middle, obviously is also regionally designated, as was mentioned earlier, as a growth center, a focus for the entire region. But similarly, within the City of Tacoma, our growth strategy really says that the primary focus for growth and development, honestly, over the last 25 years and really looking forward to the next 20 plus, should be on these concentrated, compact, pedestrian-oriented mixed-use centers. It's a place where you can get a significant portion of your daily needs met. And it also provides obvious opportunities for significant efficiencies in service and transportation elements. We've got four different types there. I mentioned the downtown. They're also broken down. We've got the mall is our other regional growth center. And then we have Crossroads and neighborhood centers. And those essentially form a hierarchy of scale and service area from the largest serving the most geographic area down to the smallest ones like a McKinley or a Proctor or Lincoln or places like that. So one of the important recognitions in our policies from the beginning has been the need for coordination. I think the city understands obviously that while we have significant influence over private development through zoning primarily, what stuff can happen where, we don't generally provide the transit facilities. You know, we build roads to some extent, which a lot of the transit components utilize, but we don't run the buses, we don't run the trains. And so in order to really facilitate that collaboration between having land use and transportation work well together, we have to work directly with our partners at Pierce Transit and Sound Transit and others. And so really that's been something from the beginning. In fact, our original comprehensive plan that we put together back in the mid-90s was done jointly with Pierce Transit. And it's why you still see a lot of crossover between Pierce Transit focus, Sound Transit focus on centers and connecting those kinds of areas. Now, important also to recognize, and I think Tim did a nice job of talking about sort of station areas or community TOD, I think the idea of what happens around the stations. The stations are important, but the areas around the stations are also important. And so the way we design those, the way we facilitate the kinds of development, the types of community amenities, and essentially help to create the community that is at the core of transit-oriented development districts or neighborhoods, I guess, is particularly important. We need the right kind of zoning in place. We need the right kind of incentives in place. We have to make sure that we are prioritizing and facilitating that type of development. And I couldn't miss the opportunity to throw in there, you see the graphic, and that's right out of the Transportation Master Plan. The transportation hierarchy is what that's called. It doesn't tie directly, but there's been so much conversation within this group about all of the different modes of transportation. The city's comprehensive plan really puts a strong emphasis on this idea that the pedestrians are, at the end of the day, at the top of the list, the most important one. And I think the recognition that whether you show up on a bicycle or on a bus or in a car or in a van pool or an Uber or whatever it is, at the end of the day, chances are if you're going to your home, if you're going to your work, if you're going to church, if you're going to, you know, any your job, you ultimately turn into a pedestrian in most cases. And so it is particularly critical that the city's infrastructure work for pedestrian. And I think there's no doubt that it's no more important, that idea, than is in these high capacity mixed use centers or these station areas, that they really are critically need to be pedestrian friendly and pedestrian oriented. So I mentioned, obviously, we've got to talk about what happens in the station area. How do we create the right kind of neighborhood or district? But the transit facilities themselves are particularly important. I think it's sometimes cliche, but everybody can recognize the concept of the wrong side of the tracks, or infrastructure traditionally that maybe has been put in that probably not by intent, but sometimes has divided communities or created barriers. And so it is really important that, you know, it's not just about getting the private development in, are designed and installed in a way that actually facilitates the kind of development that you want around it. Tim mentions this in when he talks about not only the TOD that might happen on like Sound Transit's surplus properties potentially, but the design of the station itself. And it's why it's really critical that the TOD advisor group is involved early on in some of these projects to make sure that the infrastructure is designed in a way that supports development. So not only do you want transit, you want development that builds on transit, but you want to make sure you have development-oriented transit or transits that designed in a way that supports development around it. So I also want to take the opportunity just to mention, and I think Maggie did a good job of recognizing the different types of centers. Our comprehensive plan certainly does this as well. Not all TOD is the same. Not all TOD should be or needs to be the same. There tends to be a huge focus on the residential concept of transit-oriented development, and I think that's totally appropriate. The vast majority of transit-oriented development areas that get talked about are in fact the idea of creating a place where people can live and get on the transit to access services. But it's also important to recognize, and particularly with this group, because there tends to be a lot of focus on the Dome District. And we know that one of the other big station areas that we ultimately need to talk about is the Portland Avenue station area, is that both of those are very much in close proximity to our Port Tide Flats area. In fact, the Portland Avenue station is inside the Manufacturing Industrial Center, which is shown here on the map. So that's another regionally designated center, a focus for employment and a focus for port-related activities as something that's also critical to the long-term success of this community. So not only do we need to create neighborhoods that people want to be in, mixed-use centers that people want to operate businesses in, but we also need to make sure that we understand the sort of connections that need to be made between employment areas like the port and critical regional transportation infrastructure. So then I'll just talk about a couple of examples, I guess, in Tacoma and some perspectives. Obviously, the Dome District is kind of the most obvious one. It's really probably for 20 plus years been the primary focus of transit-oriented development by the city. Is, you know, the regional facilities go back a long ways here, and the idea that that we want to capitalize on those significant investments inside the Tacoma Dome District has been a continuing and long-standing theme. We have the biggest concentration of facilities there and certainly a significant opportunity, lots of underutilized properties in the Dome District that can really build upon that infrastructure investment. At the same time, I think the Dome District is an interesting comparison in that it has been a slow progress, I guess I'll say. You know, there is massive transportation infrastructure in the area. There's no doubt about that. But we have been now a couple of decades to finally start seeing some notable residential development. So I think a good lesson in that the transportation infrastructure in and of itself isn't enough, basically. I think back to the original concept of the Tacoma Dome Station and Freight House Square, and the theory was, well, you know, you put the sounder on the other side of Freight House Square, so everybody has to walk through Freight House Square, and that, of course, all the Freight House Square businesses and Freight House Square itself will blossom because all these people will stop at all those businesses and shop there. And the truth is, it didn't quite play out that way. There was some benefit, there's no doubt, but I think the recognition that commuters don't necessarily spend a lot of time in and around the station area was probably the big lesson there, that they tend to get in their car and drive home for the most part and shop at the grocery store near their house or whatever. And so it really leads back to that idea. This is about creating a center, a district, a neighborhood overall, and that there is no one piece that really does it. You've got to have the transit infrastructure, certainly, but you also need to have a lot of the other amenities that will ultimately help to create a place that people want to live. So a couple other ones I'll just mention and sort of, again, interesting comparison, I guess, is a couple other ones in the downtown. The Commerce Street Station, which is where sort of the hub is for a lot of Pierce Transit's facilities in the downtown, as compared to the UW-Tacoma Museum District area down on Pacific Avenue. Commerce Street, which goes back even, you know, quite a ways, a couple decades, I think, also, probably an unfortunate reality where over that time there's been a significant transportation and transit infrastructure, but not a lot of compatible development going up around it. And unfortunately, I think, you know, in hindsight, looking back, you know, decisions made for numerous reasons, but the reality of the bus facilities put kind of in the back of everything, instead of being on Pacific Avenue or one of the other main streets, the transit facilities are sort of put in the alley, quote unquote. And, you know, so you end up having Commerce Street dominated by transportation infrastructure, parking garages, service entries, things like that, and really not seeing a lot of development happen in and around it. Compared to the UWT and Museum District, a pretty successful example, obviously, of transit-oriented development. Now, interestingly enough, not one that's residential-based. Obviously, you've got some community amenities around there and the museums and sort of those kinds of facilities and the University of Washington, you know, a massive destination, which really builds upon the transportation infrastructure there. But clearly, the light rail is at the core of that design. It's right in front, it's prominent. It does create one of the primary connections within the downtown up to, the northern portions of downtown, the theater district there, as well as, you know, down to the Tacoma Dome District and all those regional connections. So a much more successful example, and also with better connections up the hill, better connections out to the Foss and things like that, which really helped to create a connected area. So we, as a group, we sort of decided to end here with kind of some lessons learned. Most of these came from Tim. I don't know why that says time. I apologize, Tim, on there. But from Tim, and then I added one actually at the bottom that's not so much that wasn't in the packet that you saw, but I think for me, it's kind of been one of my big lessons learned. But really important, as it says here, to think about stations themselves, how they are designed, how they are planned, how they will work within the context of the area that you're trying to create around it, because the station itself, the design of the station, can very much influence what happens in the area. You can create a no man's land where nobody wants to build anything close to something, or you can build a place that, you know, very much is facilitating that close proximity of development. The market realities, that was part of the reason why we started with our first session, talking to the private development community, recognizing that's certainly true. And I think in Tacoma, maybe more than other places, the recognition that the market often means that things take a while, but that just means that we need to stick to it, be consistent, and really, embrace the vision long-term. And then, as I said, the one I added at the end, sort of a district perspective, the idea about, and I think particularly true in the Dome District and in some other areas, this is true when we had the mall conversation, it's true in Hilltop as well as, and the rest of downtown, is that TOD is not about getting a development. It's about creating a complete district. It's why some of the connections and things to the FOSS, to other community amenities are particularly critical in trying to ultimately achieve what is the basis of a transit-oriented development neighborhood vision. So with that, I will stop and we can turn it over to questions and discussion.
We're getting a little tight on time, but I think we have time for a couple. There were a couple suggested ones. One was asking the panelists, what are your top, it said five, I think because of time, maybe ask the panelists their top three elements to make a successful TOD. Can we do that? If it's three, it's easier than five. And any of you want to try to answer that? From your perspective, what are the top three elements to make a successful TOD? Tina, you want to lead off?
I was just jotting notes as I was thinking about that. It's the coordination and access with transit, my selfish transit hat there. And the pedestrian scale amenities, I think. I will go back to where we were so successful with tracks, and that's actually led our agency to also think about, you know, other properties we have, but even deeper in the weeds on that one, that partnership with transit on the ORCA passes to try to help individuals living in those facilities utilize the services. As an agency, it has helped us develop a program with our community development team where we're trying to go to all TOD along transit corridors or apartment complexes even where we have people and trying to develop some type of a incentive or program that they can share with residents living there so that it makes that access to transit easier and something they think about. So. Those are some of mine. For me, my top three, it can't be providing land because it's not something that we do as part of our station builds. Our stations are much smaller, but I'll stick with those local ones.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Tim Bates, do you have three you could contribute?
Well, I will just add, I think I'll build a little bit, and it won't necessarily be exactly three, but I think in the earlier parts of my presentation, I sort of mentioned that some of the key elements, and I think, yes, aside from having the transit itself, I think it's hard to separate, as Brian was just talking, it's hard to separate the individual building from the neighborhood, because I think creating an environment that somebody would be willing to, say, live without a car is really important to making a successful TOD and multiple. You know, it's about the neighborhood, really. So I think that's part of why I think focusing on the overall community around the station and the station area, not just the individual project, can be really helpful. So that's thinking about those, like having that higher density, having that mix of uses, thinking about how you make particularly the pedestrian environment really generous and comfortable and feel like a place that people do want to walk. And those are the key things, I think. And I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Okay, Maggie, do you want to add anything?
Yeah, I think from our perspective, really successful TOD is really at that community neighborhood level as well. And that really looks like inclusive spaces. So in order for the regional growth strategy to work, we talk a lot about jobs housing balance. So kind of making sure to have both jobs and residential spaces there, but then also looking at what income level people can afford different levels of housing and what jobs support that too. So just in thinking about kind of having all of these different housing choices and commercial space options as well, and thinking about those end users of that space.
Okay. Brian, do you want to pop in with anything? You already gave a pretty good summary. But
well, I'll just say, I mean, I think integrated station design, I mean, I think it's critical to have smooth connections between different modes, but also not have the transportation infrastructure overcome or dominate the area. Again, it has to be a place that people want to be, whether that's living or operating businesses or otherwise. And so I think the station design is really critical. The connections are critical. And then I think also really important to have a dense and diverse mix of housing and uses.
Okay. Anybody have questions before we move on the agenda? One question I think it's worth asking. Any specific recommendations from the panelists for Tacoma's TOD? Thinking probably of the Tacoma Dome District in particular. Okay. Members of the TODAG, you have questions, let's do it now.
I have a question.
Ryan.
Hey, so I feel like our South Downtown plan is a little incomplete. I'd really be interested in seeing the Catalyst Project, Catalyst Initiative. So I guess I have a question for Maggie and Tim. Is there grant funding available for TOD planning? And if so, how do we get one?
Maggie or Tim?
That's
either one of you, lead off. Go ahead.
Question. One thing I can start with is that places that have done station area planning in the past, that often makes them more eligible for grant fundings when they're available. So I don't have specifics on that grant funding, but when that planning has been done, it really helps with the eligibility. There are also some revolving loan funds for some specific development projects that I can also follow up with, but I don't have anything else more specific.
Okay. Brian, do you have anything?
I mean, we've done a decent amount of planning in that area, obviously. I think the desire is always to take it to the next level, and that's something that, unfortunately, Tacoma hasn't really done. We tend to move to the next one before we get down to the implementation level and the idea of exactly where you might make strategic investments to move the ball forward. So it is something that I will say the planning department has been talking about, and the council has talked about, is a neighborhood planning effort. And actually the council, just in this last budget cycle, did finally put some money forward towards at least piloting some neighborhood planning. So I'm not sure exactly where the city may focus that efforts first. We've had a lot of discussion about trying to do stuff along Pacific Avenue, obviously, where we have the BRT work going along. There's also interest in other areas like McKinley and Lincoln and places like that. And I know, I would say for the group, I think it would be important to continue to emphasize the importance of moving to that next level when it comes to these critical station areas. You know, that there really needs to be a very focused, you know, South Downtown, even just geographically, is a fairly large area, right? And so thinking about, well, what is the Tacoma Dome station area, you know, urban design plan or something like that? And what is the Portland Avenue, you know, design plan that really could provide, I think, the level of focus that people keep calling for when they talk about station area planning. And then I'll just really quickly, Don, you asked a question and there was no response. So in the way that I think about how, especially with TDLE, you know, not to be overly dramatic, but I kind of think about, you know, this is one of the biggest infrastructure investments and one of the biggest projects. I mean, we're talking multi-generational, probably almost to the extent of Interstate 5 going through or railroad tracks going through an area or something like that. And, you know, so the idea of getting it right is super important, obviously. And I think the possibilities are really good. At the same time, you know, we have to be really careful. You know, if we think about trying to, and Interstate 5 is a very large facility, but if you really tried to think about putting a facility like that in and yet trying to have growth happen in tightly with it, well, that's the challenge that we have, right? Is a significant regional infrastructure that we're trying to create neighborhoods around. And so that's why it's particularly critical that we design these things right. And it's why we have the TOD advisor group and why we very much are looking forward to that continued engagement.
Hey, anybody else? Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. I was excited to see in the presentation about the master plan that was done for the James Center and also the brewery blocks. And we all talked about kind of a consensus that the Dome District has really fallen behind in kind of that community planning. And with community being so important, would it benefit from a master plan concept to help, you know, bring people together and kind of have a cohesive, you know, plan for the Puyallup Avenue and blending it with the new station design and how commercial would be brought in?
I think in particular, after the ULI, the Urban Land Institute's report, that really provided the impetus, or should provide the impetus, to maybe build on that. I don't know how, if the city is interested in doing that, Brian, if there's an opportunity. Hate to lose what was done there.
I think it's going to, as I mentioned, I think it's going to require continued advocacy for that scale of planning from multiple folks. I will mention just really quickly, the James Center and Brewery Blocks quote unquote master plans are not city generated planning documents. Those are privately held properties for which folks are doing their own master planning. And so while they have big chunks of property and thus are creating very cool developments, those are not city led planning efforts, which I think is kind of what we're talking about here.
Okay. Okay. Let's go on to, item two. Got to watch our time here. Sound Transit Program Realignment. This is, Carrie Hill, asked for this, and I think she was responding. Possibly there's a article in the Seattle Times on February 14th, which really talked about the deficit faced right now by Sound Transit, $11.5 billion shortfall. And I guess there is a lot of concern and discussion about how that may impact some of the projects we've been talking about locally here for the last few years. So I think it is a relevant discussion. So we have Andrew Austin of Sound Transit. Andrew, the floor is yours, so to speak.
Thanks, Don. So I'm going to pull up my PowerPoint and happy to be joined by Matt Shelton, who's our deputy director in planning. Matt will be going through this presentation. Thanks for joining us, Matt. And then if you have questions at the end or or while we're going, please jump in. And also, we know you have a bit of time constraints, so happy to answer questions offline too. Can you all see that PowerPoint okay?
Yes, looks good.
Okay, great. Matt, I'll hand it over to you.
All right. Well, good afternoon, and thanks for having us today. So I'm Matt Sheldon. I'm the Deputy Executive Director for Planning and Integration at Sound Transit. And I'm one of the folks that's helping our board of directors think through how to respond to the recession that the pandemic has created and some cost increases that we're seeing. So I'm going to orient you a little bit, and then I'll talk in detail about the realignment process. Next slide, Andrew. So we're going to talk a little bit about what the COVID pandemic has been doing to our construction and ridership and service. I'm going to talk a bit about what we have underway right now that isn't being impacted by all of that, and then we'll move on to the realignment. Next slide. So just to give you a sense of sort of how Sound Transit does its work, I won't read all of these, but this is sort of the framework in which we try to operate with agency adopted values and our strategic priorities. Next slide. And next, there we go. So the first thing I wanted to say is that, you know, you probably have seen it as you've been around the region. Sound Transit has an awful lot going on. We have a number of projects in construction right now. I'll go through those in a minute, but wanted to mention that, you know, throughout the pandemic, we've actually been continuing to do work with the exception of about a 1 month pause that happened very early on, I think in April of last year. We have continued to move, and the result of that is that we've got 28 new light rail stations that are going to open across the region in the next 4 years. Next slide. So this tells you what those projects are. I'm excited to say that our Northgate Link extension, which has been in process for many, many years, is going to open this year in September. That'll be three stations north of the University of Washington. Very pointedly for this group, the Hilltop Tacoma Link extension is on track to open next year with six stations up to the Hilltop neighborhood in Tacoma. Our East Link project, which is taking light rail across the I-90 floating bridge and out to the east side, out to Overlake, is on track to open in 2023. We have extensions north and south of Seattle, up to Linwood and down to Federal Way in the I-5 corridor. Both of those projects are well under construction and on their way to opening multiple stations in 2024. And then we have a further extension on the East Link project out to downtown Redmond in that same year. We also are building a second operations and maintenance facility for the Link system over on the east side in the Bell Red corridor of Bellevue, which will open this year. And the Puyallup Station parking garage, it will open next year. Next slide, please. So with the pandemic, not surprisingly, I'm sure you have seen this on the services even down there in Pierce County with Pierce Transit, ridership is down pretty markedly. We basically went off a cliff in about March, April of last year when primarily the commuter market dried up when everybody started staying home and working like we are doing right now. However, there is a base of our service that really there are a lot of folks that are dependent on. We have essential workers that have continued to take our services throughout the pandemic. Low-income folks and the like that really need that service. So we didn't lose all of our riders, and we have plateaued at about 20% of our normal ridership, and that's starting to creep up as things get better. We're anticipating some return of ridership this year as vaccinations increase and people begin to head back to the office. We have had some issues along the way. We've had some operator shortages that have occurred from time to time with our contracted partners. We have some ST Express bus routes that have been fully suspended. We have others that are at full service and others that have partial service. And we have been operating long trains on both Sounder and Link light rail trips to be able to promote social distancing. Next slide. This gives you a sense of where we're at right now. Our Link service in Seattle is running every 12 minutes during the peaks and 15 off peak and 30 minutes in the evening. We're anticipating improving that to every 8 minutes during the peak when Northgate opens later this fall. In Sounder and the South Line, we're running about 2/3 of our pre-pandemic service. We had 13 round trips down there before. We're running 9 of those right now and about half of our normal service on the North Line. Very pleased to say, though, the Tacoma Link has been running at full service throughout the entire
over the last year. We haven't had to make any changes there. And I already mentioned what we're doing with ST Express. Next slide. So in addition to adjusting service levels to meet the ridership demand, we are doing everything we can to keep the service safe for folks that are riding. So we do have masks required. We have increased our cleaning regimen, our vehicles. That's been going on since early in the pandemic. We're expanding our weekly mask distribution, and that is going to pick up as people begin to come back to the system. And then we have airflow and filtration improvements that we've been making on vehicles as we can, and we have a passenger communications program underway. Next slide. So this just gives you a sense of what those communications look like. You know, we've really had some advertising going on both on the vehicles and elsewhere to encourage people to use touch-free payment where they can, make sure that they're wearing their masks. Next slide. I mentioned the free mask handout that is going to be ramping up as we begin to see people come back to the service. Next slide. And then we're really promoting, you know, everything we can to keep people safe and maintain social distancing, all of the things that have been advised to keep people healthy during the pandemic. Next slide. In addition, we have just launched a new campaign called All Aboard, which really is focused on not only pandemic health safety, but personal safety and inclusion on our buses and trains, and making sure that everybody feels safe riding Sound Transit service as they go about their daily business. Next slide. So let's talk a little bit about realignment and what that means. So this is to orient you to where Sound Transit gets its funds. We're largely driven by sales tax revenues. We also have car tabs, which I'm sure you're pretty well aware of, that people pay a portion of their car tabs towards Sound Transit. We have property tax is a slice of this. We receive grants from the federal government primarily. In several forms, we have fare revenues, and then we do have the ability to issue debt. Next slide. That's important because we're seeing some real pressures on a number of those sources, particularly our tax sources, as the economy has begun to move into recession during the pandemic. That has lowered sales tax revenues and motor vehicle excise tax. We also have a rental car tax that has, those revenues have largely evaporated during this period. However, that's a, I should stress, is a fairly small source of revenue for Sound Transit. At the same time that revenues are seeing pressure, we are also seeing pressure on our costs. And late last year, as a number of the projects that we have in development, part of our ST3 program that passed back in 2016, as they began to reach a point in their development process where we had done enough design to really begin to get a handle on what it was going to take to do these projects, the cost estimates started coming back with some pretty significant increases. And there are two primary reasons for that. The first is continued growth in property values. The real estate market has stayed really hot during this entire period. And particularly in our more urban areas where we have urban projects going on, we're finding that, you know, properties that when we were planning for these projects 5-6 years ago that were vacant are now being developed, and the values of those properties that we will need to acquire to build our projects have gone up markedly. At the same time, the construction market has stayed pretty hot. We have not seen, as other parts of the country have, and much softening in the construction market, and we're paying those prices at this point. Next slide. So this is a pretty sobering slide. This tells sort of the summary of the situation that we're in. Unlike many local governments that are budgeting for 1 or 2 or maybe even 6 years out, we have to balance our financial plan across the entire length of our program, which extends out through 2041. And over that period, we're seeing right now estimates of about a $6 billion revenue loss for the reasons that I cited, and we're seeing cost increases adding up to about double that. However, we do have some ability to offset those. We have some additional debt capacity that we can use. We are presuming some higher grant receipts because the size of the program has grown as much as it has. But overall, we're still looking at about an $11.5 billion funding gap to complete all of the projects that the voters approved back in 2016 on the same schedule that we indicated at that time. Next slide. This is just a graphic representation of what that gap looks like. So tax decline and capital cost increase combined, and then we sort of started step down in terms of getting to what that affordability gap looks like by looking at available debt and increases in grants. Next slide. So what are the tools that we have available to actually address these problems? They really fall into these three buckets. The first is cutting costs. Not surprisingly, when you start seeing cost pressures, people want to know where can we save? And there are ways to do that. The Sound Transit Board has the authority to take a look at reducing the scope of projects in order to save money. They can actually suspend projects until money becomes available later. And they do have the ability to outright cancel projects if they deem that in the best interest of the program and the voters. Raising new revenues, however, is an area that there's going to be a lot of focus on. This is an opportune time, in particular with the new administration in Washington, D.C., signaling more interest in funding infrastructure projects. And the state legislature is in session, and we are working with them right now to see if there are opportunities for the state to take a more active role in helping fund the regional transit program. But one of the other tools that's available is to take a look at, can we actually delay or phase projects in? And we have done this in the past when we face challenges. This is not the first time that we have been challenged in this way. In the Great Recession that happened in the 2009-10 timeframe, right after the ST2 program passed back in 2008, we needed to go through a similar process. And one of the main tools that was used at that time was to look at how can we spread projects out a bit more over time to better match our financial capacity? And are there opportunities to begin to move projects ahead even if we can't build the whole project all at once? And that's what we mean by phasing. Next slide. We can come back to these if you have questions about them, but the next steps, just to give you a sense of where the board is headed right now, is they're on a trajectory to be in a position, hopefully, to make some decisions about how to realign the program to live within our new estimated means by this summer. And this effort really began last year. They took some initial actions to define what are the factors that they wanted to consider as we moved into a realignment process. But they didn't make all of the decisions then. They wanted to see how things played out a bit with the pandemic and the economy, and now we're at a point where they're moving ahead on those. So this month, they're beginning to discuss different approaches to realignment using the mix of tools that I just mentioned. Pardon me. And next month, we're hoping that they will provide some detail about how they want to engage the public. We're looking at April is the period to do some public outreach, give people a chance to weigh in with the board on what they would like to see the board do. Pardon me. And then in the May-June timeframe, they will be digesting that input and beginning to develop some realigned plans that they can consider for action in the middle of the summer. At this point, it looks like they may have two versions of that, but we'll have to see how it plays out. There'll be a version that allows them to realign the program within the dollars we are confident that we will have available. And they may also look at a version that allows for some improvement on that situation if additional dollars come to the program. So let me stop there and happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Any questions for Matt or Andrew? Good presentation. I think as you move along towards summer, there's going to be a lot of interest, particularly as how it might affect things locally. So anybody, Carrie, did you have a question? This was your item.
One of the biggest questions I had, it sounds like we're pretty high up in the list of in terms of projects that are less likely to be scrapped, but is there anything else we can do besides adding more low-income and affordable housing to our district that would help increase our chances?
Good question.
The board has identified a number of criteria. They're not in the presentation, but criteria that they want to use to sort of weigh their options. And those include things like ridership and socioeconomic equity and completing the regional light rail spine. They have not made any decisions at this point about which projects are, other than the ones that I mentioned that are already in construction. Everything else, frankly, is still on the table. They will not decide until the summer about how they may need to rejigger the program, either with project scope or with time or with additional dollars. So I don't want to leave anybody with the impression that there are any projects that have been sort of set aside other than those in construction that are safe in this process. The board's going to need to weigh all of the needs across the entire Sound Transit district as they figure out how to balance the plan. So there are projects down in Pierce County, for instance, that will be subject to realignment, and it has yet to be seen sort of where they will fall in the list of priorities.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions before we move on to our TODAG letter of recommendation regarding Puyallup Avenue?
I have a question.
Okay. Ryan.
So this is a question for Matt or Andrew. I'm always wondering how we can get catalyst projects going, even at like a small scale. Do you have a good sense of maybe any excess property that Sound Transit has down in this area, either at both stations, or is that too soon?
That'd probably be a better question for Tim. But just
or Tim.
Just because he's closer to it than Matt. But as maybe Tim is unmuting, most of the acquisition that we will do as part of Tacoma Dome Link Extension won't happen until much later in the process. Tim, are
exactly. You? Exactly, yeah. So we haven't done any acquisition yet for Tacoma Dome Link, so we don't know. But the design is so early right now. And in terms of, you know, existing property, I'm not aware of properties that are,
we do have some property, but it's like very narrow bands of property next to the sounder alignment that was part of that project a few years ago. So I don't, we can double check for you, but I'm 95% sure none of it's really developable. It's really kind of just like along the sounder alignment.
Well, I mean, long term, just personally, I mean, I can't speak for the overall, you know, advisory committee, but like, I would be really interested in things like that, because you could do little enhancements and type things in this like remnant piece of property. So, you know, whenever you have that would be very interesting.
And not to put her on the spot, but Pat Beard, who I saw on earlier, was working on a map just for what. So once that's done, we can, I'm sure, share that, which I think will be helpful.
Okay, let's move on then. Thank you all for your valuable input and recommendations. I don't know if we'd have a way of applauding, but I would certainly applaud our panel. Nice job. Li Wong, I'm going to move down to item 3, and you were going to give an introduction on our TODAG letter of recommendation regarding Puyallup Avenue's the design project that we've been working on for the last at least a couple months. So Li Wong, you want to lead off?
Yes, thank you. What is included in the packet is a final draft of the letter of recommendation from TODAG to the Transportation Commission. So the group has been hearing a briefing of a project since September of last year, almost monthly. And some of the debriefings were more detailed than others. By November, December, the group felt there was a concern. I should say that some of the members had a concern about Transit Main being part of the potential cross-section design. and its impacts to the on-street parking. So that concern was communicated by project manager Mark DeAndrea to the Puget Sound Regional Council, the funding agency. And the Puget Sound Regional Council responded by saying, if in case transit is taking all of the scope of work, then there be a additional review process to ensure that the scope of work of the design project is still consistent with the original scope of work when the city of Tacoma received was awarded the grant, $2.1 million grant. And so because of the additional review time that may be necessary and the additional review by the city's Transportation Commission, the IPS committee and the city council, there was a thought to have a letter of recommendation from TODAG to express the group's concerns and recommendations. And so there came the first draft letter that was circulated out for group's review in early January. And the review resulted in some more concerns among the group members because the first letter was intended to cover a lot of grounds. And so before the January meeting of January 25th, there was an executive decision made by Imad, Don, and myself that we need to kind of modify the approach from the group. So there was a proposed outline for a second draft letter that was presented at the meeting of January 25th. With that proposed outline, the second letter would be much more simplified and staying on the high-level principles. And so the intent would be to express the group's comments about the group about the project at a higher level, sticking to TOD principles and trying to set the stage for the continued review at the more detailed level as the project progresses. So according to the proposed outline for the second draft, I prepared the second draft letter almost word by word for word and circulated that draft letter for additional review by the group. And this time, this was done in early February. This time the review came back mostly in favor of the second draft. However, Imad and Don felt that we should probably have a vote by the group. At the time, this was early February, we were intended to try to have the letter approved and signed off by the group so that we can forward that letter to the Transportation Commission before its meeting of February 17th. And therefore, an online voting was suggested by Imad, which I did. However, honestly speaking, did not provide a lot of time for the group to react. So with a short turnaround time, the group returned with some voting and I received 8 votes in total, 6 in favor of approving the letter, 1 abstained and 1 opposed. With that voting results, again, Imad, Don and I made a decision saying, we should probably put the letter back on the agenda for today's meeting for a quick discussion among the groups, the members, so that those supportive and opposing opinions are heard by all and then have a formal vote at the meeting so that we can forward, if approved, we can finalize the letter and forward it to the Transportation Commission. Now, the commission has met last Wednesday and is in the process of preparing its own letter, which Jennifer Camazo from Public Works will inform you right after my quick remarks. But this is where we are. We are at the point of whether if the groups would like to approve this final draft letter and send it over to the Transportation Commission. And again, in this letter, the group is expressing its comments about the design project at a very early stage, at a very high level, expressing comments in terms of pedestrian, bicycle, parking, complete streets, freight mobility, and being consistent with the transportation plan and South Downtown Sub-Area Plan. Both are elements of the comprehensive plan. So hopefully with this letter, the Transportation Commission, which will forward the letter to the City Council, that the Commission and the City Council will hear the comments and concerns from the group. And the letter will also set the stage for the group's continued review and commenting on the project. So with that, I'm gonna turn over to Jennifer. Jennifer, to talk about where the Transportation Commission is. Thank you.
Thank you, Wong. So I just kind of share some brief notes here on behalf of Mark and then also Transportation Commission. So as far as timeline goes, right now the idea or hope is that TODAG will provide your recommendations to Transportation Commission, hopefully after this meeting or shortly thereafter this week, really considering the different components of the application, whether it's to construct the grant as proposed in the application, to continue with funding the design portion of this project and providing some additional guidance to staff regarding what other allowances you would like to see within the design proposal, very similar to the letter that you provided, or the other option was to return the grant to the funding agency. But ideally, it would be to continue forward. Once the letter is completed by TODAG, the Transportation Commission will review TODAG's and BPTAG's letter. BPTAG's letter was provided to you, I believe, in December of last year for their letter of recommendation. The co-chairs for Transportation Commission have been directed to consider both letters, provide an additional initial draft, reviewing it with consistency for the transportation master plan, and then also looking for any large differences between their first letter, which was written in 2017, and what's being proposed also. At this time, Public Works staff, Mark DeAndrea, is planning to provide a presentation to IPS, Infrastructure Planning and Sustainability Committee, on April 14th. So all of this would be wrapped up and provided to IPS as part of his packet, includes the letters from BPTAG, TODAG, and Transportation Commission. And then assuming that the grant monies move forward, just for additional information, then the goal is to obligate funding for the acceptance of the grant April through May, and then the design portion, would be essentially between June and then December of 2023. So quite a bit of time to work through and work on that design side. Surveys gets a little bit more information, as we'd said in previous meetings, to understand what some of those impacts might be, what's the right-of-way we're working with, where are there other additional allowances on side streets, and what some of those interests are.
Elon?
And that's it. And so the expectation for today is for TODAG members to have a quick discussion around the table. What do you think about the final draft letter, and then put on the vote? Thank you.
Li Wang, the last draft, there were a couple changes. Do you want to say what those were?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. There was minor suggestion that toward the end of the letter, there was an indication that the TODAG understands that the letter will be forwarded by the Transportation Commission to the City Council as appropriate. The suggestion was to take out as appropriate so that it is not discretionary by the Commission. It will be done. And I have received confirmation from Jennifer that it will be done. If TODAG moves forward its letter to the Transportation Commission, the Commission will forward the letter to the City Council. So I took out as appropriate, making the sentence more definitive. There's also a suggestion to add Councilmember Robert Toms to the CC list of the letter, which I did. Thank you.
Okay. And I think the other thing I heard back from a few people was, as long as, and I think it's in the letter now, we put in, we don't know how long the TODAG as a committee is going to continue. I think Brian talked about through the end of the year. So there was language added to say that any subsequent group that represents the district would be involved in design review. And I think Mark would agree that we would get 3 or 4 reports back as this thing progresses through the design design development phase. I think that's going to allay a lot of concerns that people had, that they have an opportunity to see it as the design develops. So do we need, do we have, let's have, we could have a motion and then discussion, or we could have discussion and then a motion and then we can have a vote, if that seems to work for everybody. Janice? Laura? Anybody want to?
Yeah, I'm good.
You're good? Okay. Well, if there's no discussion, I would entertain a motion to approve the letter with the edits that Lei Wong, who's been working on the letter, just discussed with us, and throw that motion out. We could have discussion if anybody wants to add anything to it. Now would be the time to do that.
I guess I feel the need to say that there are some things in the letter that I do not fully agree with, but I feel that it is important that if we're going to move forward with the letter, we do so with one like the existing letter, which includes the transit only lane. I think that is a critical component of what we're trying to do with TOD in this district and with this project. I think there's already a significant amount of transit that utilizes Puyallup Avenue, which would not change regardless of if that transit lane is included or not. And the inclusion of that not only helps us in maintaining this funding, but increases the transit accessibility of the area. I think will make everything run a bit smoother. So I just wanted to express that the inclusion of that is very important to me in this draft of the letter, regardless of smaller things which I may disagree with.
Okay, and that's in the letter now, right? Correct, okay. So any other discussion, and then I'll call for the question on the motion to approve the letter.
Chair?
Yes, Evett.
Hi, thank you. It's a small point, but I'm going to make it here just to go on record. In the letter, the group has identified different districts, and I think that just in terms of discussion and conversation, it's going to become confusing. And I didn't really think about this until Brian's presentation, when he was talking about one district. In terms of the corridor, they're actually segments. And I'm throwing out just a cautionary note. I'm not saying that the letter should be rewritten, but it's almost as if there are districts that are being created, and I don't know that those are in alignment with any of the studies that have been done. So it just a cautionary note in terms of the Puyallup Avenue, perhaps the word segment would have been better for the different areas. But
it's in there now. It's in the letter, the latest draft. There's
has a segments. Diagram.
And identifies 3 segments. Is that correct, Lei Wong?
That's correct. Segments.
3 segments now.
3 segments.
Okay, I apologize, as I must have been looking at an older version. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay, Lei Wong, how are we going to do this? If we're going to raise our hand, if we're in support, is that, we want to just...
You you need a motion and second to approve the letter as presented, and then you call the question by asking people to, I think it'd be appropriate by asking people to raise their hands, either physically or on the sidebar. I mean, by clicking the raise hand button. So we need to have a motion first.
Okay, so the date on that letter is what? February 22nd?
That's correct, as presented, as included in the agenda packet.
Okay, so we're approving, the motion is to approve the letter of February 22nd, 21 to the Transportation Commission with our recommendations. And it's, do we need to refer to it as draft two or just leave it as the letter of February 22nd?
We can refer to as the final draft as included in the agenda packet for today's meeting.
Okay. Okay. So is there a motion from the floor for approving the letter draft two in your packets that was circulated to everybody? Okay. Ryan, are you making the motion?
No, I'm just nodding my head to acknowledge you. I've never made a motion before.
Okay. So we have the, you want to repeat the motion, Li Wang, to approve?
The motion would be for TODAC to approve the draft letter of recommendations concerning Puyallup Avenue Design Project as included in the agenda packet for the February 22nd meeting.
Okay. Okay. We've had discussion. Any additional discussion? If not, I'll call for the question. And Li Wang has suggested we raise our hands or use the sidebar to indicate if we approve.
I'm sorry, yes. Chair. I was asked to reiterate the motion, but you need somebody to make the motion and somebody to second it and then call for discussion.
Vice Chair, I would put forward the motion as stated by Li Wang Wang with a special note that I would like to give credit to the Dome District Business District for their generous concessions to make this happen.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, are we...
This is Darren Crable. I'll second the motion.
Okay, thank you, Darren. Okay, all in favor indicate by raising your hand. So Li Wang can see it on the screen, and then if not, you indicate in the sidebar, right, Li Wang?
How about indicate on the sidebar, please? It's easier for... Because the meeting is recorded, so it will be recorded.
Where is the sidebar? I don't see it. No, God.
There should be a raise hand button. If you click open the participants sidebar.
Oh boy, I've lost it. Hang on here.
Keep the raised hands there. So at the end, I will read out the result. And at this moment, we are raising hands if you approve of the letter. I am seeing 5 hands raised so far.
Staff wants you to use the raise hand button at the bottom of your Zoom screen. It's the function. It's the raise hand function, right?
Well, thank you. Yeah, thank you, Justin.
If you look at the bottom of the Zoom window, you see like participants chat, share screen, record, raise hand. Just that's the function he's wanting you to use there.
Yeah, you can keep saying that, Justin, but I don't have it.
I don't have it. If you have yours in full window, minimize the window so it's not the full screen, and then it'll pop up all in one thing. Sometimes when you do the full window, it doesn't show.
If at the bottom of your screen, if you have something that says participant or just an icon of two persons, if you click on that, it will bring up a sidebar.
Oh, thank you. Whoever offered that advice, that worked.
No problem. Thanks.
I will wait for another few seconds, and then I will read out the raised hands, and I'll ask people who may not be able to do that function to physically raise their hands. And after that, I think chair will call for the opposing votes, and we'll repeat that process. So I'll give you like 10 more seconds and I'll start reading out.
Okay.
Okay, so currently the favored votes include Ryan Gibbons, Carrie, Yvette, Laura, Darren, and Kathy. If your name are not read and you wish to vote yes, raise your hands physically now. Turn on your camera so we can see it. And I have Don, Janice. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. The record has it 8 yes votes. And Chair, you are calling for opposing votes.
I'm going to call for any nay votes. Okay. We do the same thing, same.
So those who, yes, unclick your raise hand first, and then, good. Okay, so it's clear I'm waiting for any nay votes. I do not see any nay votes shown on the right panel.
Okay, any abstentions?
Okay, I see. Oh, wait, right. I see one vote, Justin. You vote abstain. Is that correct?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, any other abstentions? So, Lee-Wan, can you give us the final on?
So, we've got 8 yay, excuse me, 8 yes votes, 1 abstention, and no opposing.
Okay. Well, I'll parrot Carrie's comment. I think a lot of work has gone into this, and a lot of people felt it was important to get the letter out with the understanding that we will have an opportunity in the future as the design develops to have further comment. Okay.
And I want to thank all the members who kind of bear with me on those emails asking you to review, comment. So,
okay.
Thank you.
Thanks to staff for the hard work. Let's move on quickly. The last item we had was item 4, the TDLE Portland Avenue Station area. I'm going to ask Lee Wong, how did we do on the matrix that we sent out? I know personally I felt a little frustrated when I looked at the exhibits that we had for the 2 station alternative sightings. I didn't feel comfortable filling it out without some more answers. I don't know if other people felt the same way, but you did not have a lot of responses as I understand it.
Right. The matrix, the format itself and the criteria were designed for a physical meeting. We get together and sit down and talk about it, and physically, you know, writing on a large piece of paper, filling out your comments or getting a vote. So the online version was exactly the same format, whatnot, but it was relatively more difficult for members of TODAC to, you know, without the benefit of talking to each other and building on each other's opinion. So the online version that I circulated out, I received only 3 comments back. I appreciate those who filled out their forms. I did not read all the comments, but I glanced them over. And for example, about multimodal connectivity, one of the five criteria, one member was more in favor of the on-street version than the span version of the station located alternatives. And the other member was silent about those two. And the third member was the opposite. And about the placemaking criterion, one member was more in favor of the on-street alternative, thinking it has a little bit more opportunity for placemaking than the span option. The other member was the opposite. The third member was equally not sure about either one. So that just gave you an example of three comments back, which is not enough. And then three comments, just among the three comments, I have all across the board kind of feedback. So I would suggest from staff's perspective, this continue to be an item at the next meeting or future meetings. And members would please continue to work on those homework, if you will, and is just kind of return the best you can, fill out all the forms and send it back to me. Thank you, Chair.
Would it be, if we bring that to our next meeting, say, will it be possible? I had some questions on the over Portland, their bus stops. It's a pretty congested corridor right now. That solution, I liked it for some of the things it did. It had fewer elevators required. It had a central platform. But I concerned about bus stops in the middle of that very restricted that corridor now. You go through there at early morning or late at night, it's a real gauntlet you have to run through. So maybe somebody from Public Works could be there for our discussion, and maybe somebody from Sound Transit.
And Pierce Transit, who are running the local buses.
Okay. Well, I'm thinking of the overall questions of the platform and some of the differences. It seemed to me that if you had two fewer elevators, there might be cost savings that could be directed towards some kind of pedestrian overpass or something like that. But I mean,
my point is the local bus service is important, that you're worried about all the buses at the bus stop, that Pierce Transit is the local bus provider. And if we're going to have a conversation about
It should be Pierce Transit, then we should have somebody there to answer questions. But we do need to get that filled out and get that matrix in. And that's our report number two that we talked about after we did report number one. So go ahead. Who was speaking? Go ahead.
I'll wait for Li Wang.
Li Wang.
Oh, I just want to make a note that this item has been on the agenda for the past few meetings, but the group has been spending time on the TOD roundtable, which will have the third session for the next meeting. So you are going to again running into the kind of a short of time for discussion. And so the suggestion may be that members continue to try your best to fill out the form and send them back to me. And at the next meeting, because we always have representatives from Sound Transit, Pierce Transit here at the meeting, so it would be very convenient we started another round of discussion. And so I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. So with that, let's plan on putting it on the agenda for either the next meeting or the meeting that follows. Do you want to, Li Wang or Brian, bring us up to date on communication items?
Brian, are you still on? The communication item is about...
Go ahead, about the next agendas would be the main thing one.
Yeah, actually about, if you have the agenda packet convenient available to you, it's the last two pages that show the schedule for our meeting for the next few months, as well as the TOD roundtable series, the plan for that. So I'll leave it at that, and Brian would jump in if you have any additional comment?
Nope, I'm good.
Okay. Staff and the chair and vice chair typically do meet after our meetings, and we work on the agenda for the next meeting. So we'll be doing that next week. Is there anything else good for the order? If not, I don't have anything. I know Chair Baba will hopefully be here for our next meeting. He has had a serious loss in his family. So with that, if there's nothing else, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn. Somebody want to make a motion to adjourn?
This is Justin Layton. Move to adjourn the meeting.
Okay. Second.
I will second. Okay. Take care of yourselves, everyone, and please stay safe.
Okay. All in favor indicate by saying aye. I think we're adjourned, folks. Thank you very much for your valuable input. We really appreciate it.